The Disciplined Investor is underwritten by Interactive Brokers. Interactive Brokers charges USD margin rates from 0.75% to 1.59%, with rates subject to change. Learn more at ibkr.com/compare.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
The headlines keep pouring in. We have earnings, economics, the Fed, and new stimulus. And we're looking at how to protect what you got. All this and much more on episode number 712 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, here we are. It's May 2021. You know, it's that time we start hearing, well, that old adage, sell in May and go away. What do we make of that? It's going to be the same thing this year or different from what we've seen in the past, although each and every year is always different. And once we know that there is a pattern that has emerged, oftentimes what happens is that pattern never comes back to play. So I don't really know. I don't know if I'd necessarily bet on just simply looking at the idea that, oh, well, you know, during this time, what used to be a period when traders would go on vacation and, you know, not really go to the office. And I would, well, we're not in that kind of situation anymore, are we? Well, so maybe we need to put that aside for a little bit. How about a little introduction here? Because I want to welcome everybody to the longest running financial podcast in history. Seriously, since 2007. We've been meeting every single week for important discussions on finance. And me, oh yeah, well, I'm the host all that time, Andrew Horowitz. I'm founder of Horowitz & Company. We're investment advisors. Basically, what is that? Well, we help people and businesses with their investments, help to create portfolios and manage it. It may seem like a confusing topic, and, well, we try to make it really easy for you. Like we do each and every week, we talk about the ideas of, you know, what to do with your IRA and your 401k rollovers. And many of you have still those plans at your former companies where you used to work, and maybe you're not aware that you could actually roll them, if it makes sense to do so, to a self-directed IRA. And we help people facilitate that all the time. So something to keep in mind, that's what we do all the time, and we make sure that we are focused on goals-related investing. We have a plan. We have a strategy. Don't you? I think you do. I know you're listening to this. You're becoming more of a disciplined investor every week that you spend time. And as we talk, whether it's one-on-one or whether we have a guest that brings some other information in. And I think right now it's a really important juncture. I think it's a really important time to just take a breath and think about where we are. Because it's kind of an interesting point in the market cycle, in the economic cycle, with a little bit of a twist. Because if you think about where we are in the economic cycle compared to other times, you know, it used to be very, I don't want to say simple, but it was a different set of circumstances. It was, you know, you go through this long period or a short period, whatever time frame it was, of an expansion in an economy, and that would help stocks, and you'd see people going back to work, and the underlying economics would look to show us certain characteristics of how it was operating from our country, or if you look at anywhere else around the world, whether it's here or whether it's in Japan, whether it's in Asia, depending on what you're looking at, could be the global market. But we had a cycle, this peak to trough, and then from trough to peak. It was this natural phenomena that long time ago would come and go. And it's kind of changed. No longer do we have a very simple economy that is essentially homegrown, holistic. There's a lot of outside forces that are trying their damnedest to, I guess the best way to describe it would be to take away the natural economic cycle. It's kind of like biotech engineering tampering with the weather. And what we're finding out along the way is there's some really good benefits. Listen, when feds and central banks and governments step in with all sorts of money and they come into the rescue on a regular basis, it sets up for a really interesting kind of euphoria, but also a break of the traditional economic cycle. However, what I think is happening now with all the excess amount of stimulus and the elongated period of low interest rates due to an unforeseen circumstance like the pandemic that we're seeing right now and a global crash of economic conditions and an entirely different set of circumstances moving forward to get back to whatever normal was, whatever it's going to be in the future, there are these unintended consequences that I think are really going to be very important to recognize as we go through trying to analyze where we are in terms of the economic cycle, wherever that may be, and what does that actually mean for you and me with our investments, with our future, with stocks, with bonds, with cryptocurrencies, with gold, with lumber, copper. You know, what does this all mean? But I do believe these unintended consequences are going to show up in a good way as well as in a not so good way. And this happens when we start tampering with the natural process. And I was thinking about this and I was like, when have I seen something like this happen in real life? Aside from some of the bubbles that we've seen in the past with economics. And I kind of had a couple examples, maybe a little weird, crazy, somewhat interesting, but fully unrelated to what this is. However, I think it gives us some really good insight. And one of the things I was thinking about was that several years ago, I owned a lake house in mid-Florida, Lake Placid to be exact, just south of Sebring, about 2 hours north on Highway 27 of Fort Lauderdale area, West Fort Lauderdale. Kind of have to travel up Highway 27 through some really interesting towns, through a lot of sugar fields, processing plants. Great place to get boiled peanuts and street tacos on the way out, on the way up, okay? Just kind of imagine that. But a lot of concrete on the way up, a lot of road, and not much more. So in Lake Placid, Florida, it used to be a great place to fish and swim and ski. Nice lake that I lived on. It was about 4 miles across by 2 miles wide, okay? 4 by 2. Pretty decent size. In the middle, it was about, I think the maximum depth was somewhere about 50 feet, somewhere around there. And right before I moved in, it seemed like the lake had a problem. There was a lot of grass growth happening. And that was somehow decided to be a problem because it was taking over and there was concern that what was going to happen was it would choke off the oxygen, the ability for the sun to shine through, especially in the depths, and that would kill the bass, the largemouth bass population, as well as the crappie population. Crappie's a fish. Crappie fish. That's what it's called. It's a little kind of it's like a little bluegill kind of thing, and they're good for pan frying, and people really like fishing for crappie. They're easy catch. Nighttime, often they're attracted to lights. So what the government or the people in the local township decided to do was, hey, we need to do something about this grass. What they did is they introduced sterile tilapia. This is the story that I got. They introduced sterile tilapia and some grass-eating carp into the lake, thinking that when you go through one generation of these tilapia, that it would eat a lot of the grass, but that would be it because they can't reproduce. They're sterile, of course, right? And something with these grass-eating carp wouldn't be too much of a problem long-term. Well, you already know the rest of the story, I'm sure, of what happened here. Somehow, magically, the tilapia multiplied. The grass carp kept eating the grass. And it's pretty interesting what happened next. I want to tell you about this because these are the unintended consequences of doing things that maybe we really don't fully understand. And there's more to this story. Before we get to that, I want to talk about Portfolio Analyst, which is powered by Interactive Brokers. Because Portfolio Analyst helps sophisticated investors understand the health of their complete financial portfolio. Portfolio Analyst is free. It's easy to use. It's a personal finance software and creates essentially a consolidated view of your banking and brokerage credit card accounts, giving you a really good look at what you have. And you can compare your consolidated portfolio against more than 200 benchmarks, or you can even create a customized benchmark for analyzing performance. You can calculate time and money weighted returns and use Portfolio Analyst for forecasting. The best part, it's free. You could sign up for free at PortfolioAnalyst.com. That's PortfolioAnalyst.com. I want you to check that out. Now back to our fish story for a second and these unintended consequences. And here's what happened. As I mentioned, the sterile tilapia multiplied, which wasn't supposed to happen. It was supposed to be this one generation and that's it. Few grass carp. Eventually, the lack of grass created a new problem, as that was where the bass and the crappie fish would, crappies, they're called crappies or crappie fish, where they would essentially go there to bed and spawn. So now there's no grass. Bass are having difficulty reproducing. The tilapia, which are aggressive fish, are taking over. The carp are just continually eating everything out there. And now there's no decent bass fishing and the crappie population was dying out. And in the end, what happened was it was a nice clean lake that didn't have a lot of grass on top. But now the largemouth bass fishing was awful. This was a prize bass lake. And they started messing with the natural balance and got unintended consequences. Now, another example, you've probably seen this, and I really want to make sure we're clear about that, that really working and pushing on the naturalness of the economic cycle is going to create problems. It was that movie that you may have seen. It's a series now, too, called Snowpiercer. Now, of course, this is not real life. This is just a story, a movie. But the basic storyline is that Earth's weather was changing and they decided to try to change the weather pattern. But something went terribly wrong. And the Earth froze. Temperatures were down to, I think it was like 120 below Celsius. And everything that was exposed died. Besides the people on this train, which is the story, this perpetual motion train. 1,000-something cars long. Very interesting story. But the point was, again, unintended consequences from a smart government and from actions they did to change the natural order of things. So let's bring this now to the economic cycle where we are now. Back to the, well, do we sell in May? Under, quote-unquote, regular times, there was some interesting discussion of why that would be somewhat of a good idea. But again, things are much different right now, not only due to government actions, but also due to the change in how trading works. You don't actually have to be in the office to trade. In fact, most traders are not in the office trading. We have a little thing called the internet that came upon us a number of years ago, allowing for traders to work and play remotely. But we're seeing the biggest economic experiment in history unfold right before our eyes. And it is causing, even though they say it is not, even though it is told to be transitory, we are seeing inflation. I've been talking about this a lot. We covered all this, and we've looked at the insights from what we see as the official numbers, but we've also seen prices themselves. You know, lumber and copper, housing prices. Oh, I got a story about that for you. Fuel, food. Yeah. We're told to believe that it is transitory, which is kind of hard to believe. I don't know. Trying to figure out how this is just a transitory 1 to 2 month phenomena with all that's going on and with more stimulus being pushed and rates as low as they are is a pretty difficult pill to swallow, in my opinion, at least. And we're supposed to take that from the Fed, who's been absolutely horrific at forecasting time and time again. They've always been terrible, but that's not really their job, forecasting. They're really here to simply keep confidence and make sure the economy, no matter what's going on, no matter how things are going, we need to make sure people have a high confidence level in the future in order to continue on and play along with the idea that, you know what, it may be bad now, but don't worry about it. Sometime in the future, it's going to all work out. And it does. For the most part, if you've been around a long enough time, you realize it's worked out. We've had some horrible situations back in the 80s, the 90s, the early 2000s. We've seen it in most recent time over the last decade and a half or decade and a quarter. Three different major crashes from trough to recovery and then back down to the peak, from the peak back down to the trough again. But what we have right now is an incredible difference. And the difference is the size of the stimulus that we have right now combined with interest rates that are so low, the debasement of our currency that we have to put into perspective with regard to this. The word, the actual descriptor does not qualify correctly. Massive, historic, gargantuan debt level that we have now that's only going to go up. We are in uncharted territory. There's no question about that. I don't think you think that we're in normal times either. Let me just say that this is not a reason to just say, you know, hey, I'm out. See you later. Gone. No, it's something to take notice of. I've seen these kinds of things back in the, we'll call it the early 2000s, and I'll tell you about that for a second. There is some incredible, there's incredible movement in a lot of areas, and people are really forcibly moving into the housing market, cryptocurrencies, some inflation protection, detecting areas, even stocks. We know that's all going on because there's kind of a fear of, well, not only missing out, but a fear of it getting away from them in terms of price, which is therefore the very basic definition of how inflation and inflation in economy is supposed to work with the velocity of money that picks up because people are actively pursuing buying things now because they believe that prices will be higher in the future. I was telling you, I think on this show or maybe on DH Unplugged, I don't remember, but there was a neighbor of mine on the water who bought his house a few years ago for, let's call it $500,000. And he called me up recently and said, hey, I'm thinking about selling. What should I do? We had a long talk about it. And the house in the last 5 years is up about 60% in total value. He listed his house for $750,000. This past weekend, there was an open house. I heard, I was not around to see this myself, but my neighbors on the other side told me that it was like looking at the Chick-fil-A line for takeout when there was a sale. The open house was so busy and people were above ask offering significant amounts of dollars. This is not just something you hear about that happened in some place in Texas or some place in Arkansas, maybe somewhere in Washington State or wherever it may be. This is happening everywhere. Now, in Florida, on the water, there's a little bit more action on that area. And of course, we know that there's a desire to live in the areas that you can have sunshine throughout the year and maybe even live on the water. So that probably added to some of this, but a major above S, $750,000, they're thinking $100,000 more at least this house will go for. Uncharted territory. For those of you that don't know, there was a time that you'd put your house up for $750,000, hoping for $700,000. Today, you put your house up for $750,000, you're hoping for at least $800,000. So I don't understand exactly how that works. But okay, when I put it up for $800,000 and look for $850,000, I guess at that point. But oh, whatever. This is how the game is played right now. And with all of this, with what's going on right now, that you know, this is not... The information that I'm bringing you is nothing. There's nothing new about any of this that I'm telling you. It's not like, I didn't know that. No. But I'm trying to encapsulate it for you, really to put it into a moment that you can think about what is next. And what are you going to do about it? Now, if we back up a little bit, here we are in May of 2021. Let's back up to June 2020. We had a heart-to-heart discussion. For those of you that haven't been with us that long, I'm just going to give you a quick preview of it. But those of you that have been, it's going to ring a bell and you're going to know exactly what I'm talking about. Because back then, if you remember, people were really scared. Even though we got some recovery off of the bottom in March and April of 2020 after the government shut down everything, we had no idea how long this deal was going to go on, how long the shutdowns, the economy, the bankruptcies that were looming, all the things that were happening. We didn't know how many people would be out of work or in work. Really, a lot of confusion back there. And what happened was people were really concerned about their portfolios. And we talked about something very, very simple. We talked about the idea that, as we talked about before, you kind of have to be in it a little bit, but you don't want to get slammed. And we talked about if you're trying to get back into the market, maybe if you sold out, how would you do so? We called it the very simple process of one foot in and one foot out. And the idea was that we would dollar cost average in over a period of time, use opportunistic buying periods where maybe we saw a dip in markets in certain areas that made sense, that had value, to start pushing money in over an elongated period of time to get you in where you should be appropriately, assuming that you were willing to take the risk, your time horizon was right, and with the knowledge that, yeah, you know what, I sold out, I really should pick up on some of these bargain prices. One foot in, one foot out to get back into position. And a lot of you took that advice because you wrote me about it. And you worked your money into the markets over the past many months. And the question is that the end of the story? Kind of get yourself in there. You got yourself set up. You were looking to put money to work. But where are we now? Are we in a set it and forget it kind of situation now? Is that where we are? Well, we got in. We kind of legged in there. So now we're good to go. I mean, what's your plan at this point? I started thinking about this and here we are again, 1 year later, with an interesting point in the economic cycle. Earnings pretty much as close to as good as you can get with the growth that we've seen on top of the massive stimulus and buybacks that have gone on with the knowledge of another round of stimulus happening, with interest rates starting to think about, well, maybe the bond buying program from the Fed, the quantitative easing, we're going to start seeing a taper a little bit sooner than we thought, but we'll see how that plays out. What's the plan now? I started thinking about that. for those of you that want to kind of ride some of the waves a little bit, and you said, well, I'm going to get in, and you did, in fact, push yourself into the markets, maybe you should consider reversing some of those excess gains that were accumulated and rebalance. Okay, we've talked about that. Where do you have those great gains? Cut some of those, rotate them, rebalance those into your portfolio. And maybe what we should be calling that now, simply, very simply, and more so for our understanding of this kind of psychologically, 1 foot out and 1 foot in. And that concept works just as well when there's an overbought condition or maybe a turning point. Kind of collect those profits and rebalance and perhaps wait to deploy. Now, there's different ways of doing this and there's different ways of setting up. So I'm really talking to the people that got fully invested over the last year, well, last 6 months, whatever the time period is that you went through the process of a dollar cost averaging approach in, and assuming that maybe your portfolio is higher risk than you want to be, or if you're thinking that, hey, you know what, if we do roll over, it's going to be a real problem. Now, when I say real problem, psychologically, mentally, you're not going to be able to deal with it because you don't want to be in a situation like when that time was that you pulled everything out and missed out on the opportunity. So kind of a reverse dollar cost averaging to a degree to rebalance and to reduce the overall risk on your portfolio. And we consider that in a way, 1 foot out, 1 foot in. Now, let me tell you real life for a second. A lot of what we did for our clients over that period of time, anybody that was new to us that wasn't invested at all, who really was concerned, was we do two legs. We did one, a dollar cost average in and an opportunistic move into the markets, but also to a degree, took their risk profile down a notch during that period to make sure that for the long haul, there is some comfort, stability of mindset, and the ability to kind of ride through different waves of the economic cycle. But a lot of people didn't actually do that. What they did is they just pushed in, right? You may have just pushed in higher amounts of equities that ran up pretty well, or maybe even your equities ran up so you have a higher amount. Your allocation is unbalanced. So I think there's something to be said there for this whole idea of taking some profits, rebalancing, waiting to deploy for that opportunistic dip in the markets. You could do that easily with portfolios. Not so easy, for example, with houses. How great would it be to say at your house, you know, my house is gone up 50% in the last couple of 3 years. You know, I'd like to take a 10% profit off of that, you know, and not move. Kind of take some of your chips off. Very difficult, very different. The house is one unit. You can't sell less than one unit. Maybe somebody thinks, hey, you know what? Maybe what I'll do now is, I got an idea. Maybe I'll sell my house, get this major up in this euphoria that's going on, and I'll rent for a while until the prices circle back to where they're reasonable again. The problem with that is that it may take a while and maybe renting is not much cheaper. You could take some of the money off the table. Problem is you have this all or nothing proposition. And the difference with the portfolio is that that's not the case. You can have the benefit of essentially partially moving around your positions. Kind of like selling the garage and the spare bedroom in a house, I guess, right? Where you just say, oh, you know what? I'm just going to take the profit and the garage is that. We'll sell that off. I guess there's somebody out there smart enough to figure out how to do that maybe. But, you know, the problem you have here is that when we look at the differences in investments or housing, a lot of people think it's an all or nothing proposition. In a house, it kind of is. However, with your portfolio, it isn't. And let me tell you another story. Back in March of 2020, because I was reminded of this as I was kind of thinking through what I wanted to talk about today. A friend of mine called and he was really nervous. Really nervous. Andrew, what do I do? What do you mean? He's not a client. I said, what did your advisors tell you? Well, my advisor said, don't worry about it. Don't sell a thing. Don't do anything different. But I'm freaking out, he said. He didn't like at all what he was seeing in the markets, which, of course, we knew. Nobody liked what they saw unless you were short, right? His advisor was telling him to hang in there. He didn't want to. He called me. I told him I wasn't going to give him advice because I don't know what you have. And the fact of the matter is, if you decide against going with the advice of your advisor, what are you going to do? I said, the only thing I can tell you is this. If you decide that you want to sell all, part, sum, the entire amount, whatever it is, you have to commit to having a plan. You have to have a plan. Do not do anything without a plan. I said, what do you mean? The plan's easy. I'm going to sell out. I said, yeah, okay, when are you getting back in? Because you're going to want to get back in. Yeah, I want to get back in eventually. Okay, well, when is that going to be? When the market's down 20%, 30%, 40%, when you find that the market's now up 10% from the bottom, or that there's all of a sudden, I don't know, an all clear signal that comes in the sky at night that you see, what's going to be that plan? What is going to be that catalyst? You need to have a plan to going back in if you're going to sell out, I told him. We talked about it. And I made it very clear like 500 times in that conversation. I said, listen to me. If you're going to sell, because it sounds like no matter what anybody tells you, that's what you're going to do. And if that's what your decision is, I have no objection with that at all. But you need a plan to get back in, because if you don't, you'll never get there. Because every single time, if we start moving higher from here, you'll say, you know what, it's going back down. If it goes up 20%, you'll say, you know what? It recovered. I can't, because you know what? Look at where I sold. I sold all the way down there. It's higher now. I need to wait for it to come back again. The point is that his gut was telling him something that may not have been correct at the time. But he needed to have a two-part plan. Because if he sold everything on his gut, he's probably not going to be able to feel that to get back in. This is a real problem. What he could have done, and something that you could work on, is looking at the potential that there is many outcomes possible. He was only seeing that for the elongated period of time that when this pandemic was starting to really occur, that basically everything would be ruined forever. And he really didn't think about, well, what if this changes something in the economic cycle, in the valuation of stocks for the better somehow? Is that a possibility? Or what areas would really benefit that I could switch my portfolio to? Or maybe the Fed is going to knock rates down. Maybe the government's going to come up with ungodly amounts of stimulus, not only here in the U.S., but around the world. There are other possibilities, but he was really focused on what he believed in his judgment and in his historical reference he could see. He had some blinders on there. So many of the unpredictable outcomes that were out there were not something he was really looking at, and that's why I insisted on having a plan. And while right now, here we are in a time where everybody is bullish on stocks and looking at the opportunity for unlimited stimulus in the future and for the Feds to stay in total dovish mode until 2023 with no changes, where are the other things that are happening out there that could happen? I'm not talking about a revival of the pandemic, although that, who knows? I'm not saying that there's something weird that will happen with the vaccines, because I don't know, who knows? Maybe it just gets back to a little normality. That's why I'm talking about 1 foot out, 1 foot in, reversing the process. Again, if you have a very high exposure to risk assets. So there are a lot of ways to do that. Again, whether you sell or not, or just rebalance and change the risky nature of your portfolio in the short term. I'm not telling you to sell out. You know that. I'm just giving you some ideas, some things to think about. For those of you who are thinking, you know what? Maybe I'm out. Maybe I'm done with this whole thing. But you know what? A lot of different scenarios, a lot of different possibilities out there. Some are unpredictable. But we are living within a historic and a very different experiment than we've ever seen before. By repositioning, you can have kind of the exposure you want, but maybe a lesser degree of volatility in the portfolio, but still being in the game. This way, even if the decision to be out or in is wrong, you could still participate, but yet have the opportunity to have some gray in there. It's not a black and white situation. That's probably where most people go wrong. The idea of market timing, all in, all out. It's about being in the game, not being on the sidelines. How many times have we talked about that, right? You may be playing right field for a while, but you're still in the game. And you have to ask yourself, and I ask myself all the time, what's the point of all this education and knowledge and research and learning about markets if we're just standing there watching others benefit from what we know, what you know as a disciplined investor? There are always opportunities in some areas of the market. And that's where diversification comes from. That is the whole ticket right there. That is your whole price of admission. That is your whole basic look to the future of why it is so important to be diversified, because we don't exactly know where that diversification will benefit or detract. We don't know what areas of the market will participate or won't, but you know what? You have to have it covered. Who would have thought that there would be such an incredible move on technology right from the get-go in 2020 to a level like we saw? Who would have thought that, you know what, energy was going to be such an incredible mover in the latter part of 2020 into 2021, where we are now? There are always opportunities in some area of the market, but you'll never, never get those opportunities by standing with your hands in your pockets, in the stands, watching the game. Let's get it going, man. I mean, if not now, when? When? What are we waiting for? 1 foot out, 1 foot in, or vice versa. Trying to encourage you to get in the game no matter what the near-term outlook is. Now, I'm not saying push in. Let's make it clear about that, right? I just want to make sure as I try to give you the confidence to make some good decisions for your portfolio, whether it's rebalancing, taking risk off the table, or rebalancing, putting risk on if you're really light. I'm not saying that equities are fairly priced or bonds are at a bargain right now. But surely when we're talking about something like your IRA that you're not going to touch for 10 or 15 or 20 or 30 years, there's plenty of time for you to maneuver. You have the opportunity to benefit from investing for many, many years in a well-thought-out, diversified portfolio that fits your risk level. That's the whole point here. You want to be aligned and have your portfolio aligned with your time horizon, your risk factors, and all that. Unless, of course, maybe there's probably somebody out there that's like, you know, hey, ask me my risk tolerance. Okay, what's your risk tolerance? Zero. I don't want risk. Now, if that's you, I'm not sure what you're listening to the show for. I'm not sure what you're learning. Probably frustrating yourself watching all the opportunities go by right in front of your face, right in front of your eyes, to see them kind of coming and going. You're like, ah, oh, could have got that one. Yeah, but I don't want the risk. Oh, right? So most of us aren't like that. And I know this because the name of the podcast is not the Guaranteed Zero Interest Investor or the, what else would it be called? Let's see. Oh, how about, how about the smart CD Saver Hour? I gotta write that down. The Smart CD Saver Hour podcast. Listen, it's really important to step back, look at within, Just take that moment for a bit of introspection. Every so often, you want to reassess where we are as investors as we look objectively, which is a hard thing to do when it comes to our own money, but look objectively to our future. Can you do that? Question is, you know, what is it worth to you? Now, let's do this together. Let's plan. Let's work the plan and execute. Listen to that. Plan, work the plan, and execute. And all we have to do is use some very basic principles of dollar cost averaging in and out. It can work for you over the long haul if you are looking at a diversified approach, if you are being smart with your investing. And that's something that I think that we really try to convey. It's not about just making massive amounts of money in the next 2 weeks. That's great. That can happen. I'm all for it. It's also about the bigger picture, about making money over the next 20 years for financial security, financial independence. And that's what we're talking about here. Now, one of the other things that's interesting when we talk about this whole idea of, hey, maybe rebalancing in a time when we're seeing this economic reality hit and maybe at a point where earnings peak is happening. Again, it doesn't have to happen right now or 3 months from now or 6 months from now, but something about, you know, hey, what's going on with the hedging strategies? And is there a time for that? Or is it just dead? Is shorting stocks just passe? It's never going to be able to be done again. We've seen that short interest rates overall in the markets have dropped down to historic levels, and we've seen names that are well-known in the industry for shorting and short portfolios have just taken a beating. Assets dropping by 60, 70%. Nobody wants to be that guy. But there's a lot of different ways to hedge out risk. Not all of them work perfectly. I'm just going to say that right off the bat. But one thing we've been doing for the TDI Managed Growth Strategy, which is our long-short strategy, our trading strategy, where we have core equity positions, and we have a segment of the portfolio that is dedicated for what we call alpha generation or swing trade potential, as well as for hedging. But one of the problems you have right now is markets won't go down. That's not a bad thing. I'm happy as a clam about that. Or an oyster. Okay? Any kind of mollusk. But one of the things we've been doing instead of necessarily hedging in a big way is holding a cash position that we're calling a buffer. There's nothing wrong with it. We're holding a buffer in our portfolio, and we haven't seen too many reasons to rush out shorting. We have about a 70% allocation core equities for the time being. When we see the dips are being bought and there's a good amount of money in the system, we're generally happy with our names and the potential for growth for them. And as for the markets, well, there's not many drawdowns right now. We're not seeing it. And we're not seeing that even a drawdown can last a significant period. Yeah, we saw one drawdown for the NASDAQ last month. Okay, fine. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a sustained downturn that has a lot of potential. That doesn't mean it's not going to happen. That doesn't mean we're all in. We're clearly cautiously optimistic, and that's working right now. But we do have a buffer now in cash. No, it's not earning any money. That's okay. It's not losing any money ever either. And the reason is, since we're not hedged and have a good deal of positioning equities in the portfolio, we're using this cash buffer as a way to have some, I guess, wiggle room in the portfolio. Depending on how markets behave, we can add a market hedge if we want. We could short some positioning. We could do it short term. We could do it long term. Bottom line is, we have some powder dry in a time that's really interesting when it comes to equity markets and for the areas of commodities. So we have this powder that's dry and acts as a, again, a bit of this simple buffer. And the eventual potential and the event that the maybe the things go, well, a little bit sideways, we have the availability to buy or short if the opportunity arises, or hedge utilizing ETFs, possibly options. So with the markets at these I would say frothy levels or fully valued. That's a good way to look at it. Fully valued as I see it, which, by the way, could stay for some time. There's probably a really good reason to have some cash buffer for some opportunities. And just another way of looking at what is hedging in a portfolio. Doesn't necessarily have to be all hedged or short or something else. We have some gold in the portfolio. Excuse me, some silver in the portfolio. Yes, gold and silver in the portfolio. Pardon me. And we have some cash. And we have on and off a couple of swing trades, short and long. But again, committed to just for the moment, having this wiggle room and opportunity in the managed growth strategy. By the way, you can find out more about the managed growth strategy. There's a quick video over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. The show notes of this episode, episode number 712, will also have a link there that you could watch the video. It's a quick walkthrough and how the strategy works with the core positioning and hedging and all the things that happen. So I encourage you to check that out, especially at a time like now where we're seeing these valuations that are significant. And you really want to, I think, have the high quality growth oriented, when I say growth, continuation of quality management, high ROE, consistency of growth is really the point here, inside of a portfolio, but something to look at in there. All right. So we talked about one foot in, one foot out, and switched it, turned it right on a dime and talked about one foot out, one foot in. We talked about the idea of diversification right now in the biggest experiment that's ever been out there. We talk about the idea that maybe looking to rebalance and take some risk off the table, right? We talked about that. We talked about the uncharted territory that we're seeing right now with regard to how governments are doing things and the unintended consequences of what happens when you put sterile tilapia and grass carp into a lake. All the same, fish tell us an interesting story. So this all ties together. The uncharted territory, the unintended consequences, and the potential for a lot of different possible outcomes that you don't want to be on one side necessarily, all in that way or all out the other way. It's a mix. It's a process. It's discipline. That's what I want to give you for today. Thank you so much for joining. Please visit thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Give us some thumbs up on, well, I don't know, Twitter and maybe on iTunes and wherever else you find great podcasts. Do me a favor, write a quick review. I'd appreciate it. And I am going to sign off, and hopefully this is some good information to where you want to be. If you want to work with us, I want to work with you. Let's get it together. Let's get it on. Let's get going. Visit us, and I'll see you again next week. Thanks so much. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.